Inside the Cross Podcast.
Welcome to this week's one-on-one Inside the Cross Podcast. John Gelati here for Inside the Cross, and happy to be back with a second straight Google Hangout for you, coming with the audio from the video chat that I did Monday night with Cornell graduate Max Seabold, Tuareton Trophy winner, and a man of many connections in the lacrosse world. We talked about a host of different things, mostly focusing on the upcoming Cornell-Syracuse matchup, 6 o'clock Wednesday night, live on ESPNU if you can't get up to Syracuse to the Carrier Dome. Max and I talked at length about the 2009 NCAA final legendary game between the Big Red and the Orange that Max was involved in, had a huge role in. Unfortunately, did not get the win, but he was very open and honest about that game and the rivalry that kind of, I think, grew and evolved and branched out as he was at Cornell and has now become one of the best rivalries in the game. It's a unique one with the midweek set up every year since the teams are so close to each other in Ithaca and Syracuse that happy to have this one on ESPNU this time around. And we also talked about the big Syracuse-Princeton rivalry coming up at the Big City Classic, the Conoco Minolta Big City Classic, April 27th at MetLife Stadium in East Rutherford, New Jersey. BigCityClassic.com for tickets. A huge rivalry game and a big Ivy League matchup for both teams that are both in the top 10 right now. We also talked about his recovery from a foot injury that has kept him out of the NLL season and has him looking forward to the MLL season with the New York Lizards. A little bit of Nike lacrosse, some great instructional training and playing tips for kids, I think, from his perspective, playing in big pressure situations and preparing for those. As always, an insightful and fascinating conversation talking with Max. And as always, we encourage you to search out our Inside the Cross podcasts on iTunes. Search for Inside the Cross. You can also access them on insidethecross.com/podcasts. We encourage you to share them with as many people as possible via whatever social media strikes your fancy, email, Facebook, Twitter, Reddit, LinkedIn, Instagram, whatever floats your boat. Please share it with your friends and leave us some feedback and comments if you'd like. You can use my Twitter handle at JJILOTY. You can use @inside_lacrosse. You can also email me at jgelati@insidethecross.com if you'd like to hear anything or have any critiques. We're all ears. So please support us on the podcast. Please provide feedback and make sure to check out a great interview with the great Max Seabold, and also be sure to check BigCityClassic.com for tickets to the April 27th Conoco Minolta Big City Classic at MetLife Stadium in East Rutherford, New Jersey. Syracuse, Notre Dame at 6:30, and Princeton, Cornell at 4 o'clock. Thanks again, and enjoy this interview. All right, we are live with the second ever Inside Lacrosse Google Plus Hangout, this time joined by Max Seabold, Cornell University grad, Tuareton winner, and current New York Lizard Nike lacrosse representative, U.S. team hopeful, injured Philadelphia wing. What's going on, man? How you doing?
Not much. As you said, been injured for the past couple months, so that's keeping me busy with rehab, working out, trying to get in shape for MLL season, but excited to get back on my feet for the first time this week. We're walking without crutches or cane or boot. So headed in the positive direction for the first time in a while. And, you know, other than that, excited to see my Big Red doing some good things and Robbie Pinnell and the seniors there leading the charge. So got some exciting things to look forward to in the next couple of weeks.
Nice. Yeah, a lot going on over these next couple of months. So April and May are probably the two busiest months of the year for lacrosse, and then MLL season kicks off. So why don't we start with, as you mentioned, Cornell is having a great year, 10-1, heading into the Syracuse game on Wednesday night live on ESPNU, 6 o'clock p.m. Eastern Standard Time. Wanted to kind of talk to you about that game since, you know, you were so that rivalry, I feel like, really kind of took off in its recent incarnation, you know, during your time at Cornell. Unfortunately, not the best result that I know in 2009. But why don't we first start off with this year's game, Wednesday night, and kind of what your expectations are from what you've seen so far out of the Big Red?
I mean, it's always a great battle. It's an upstate rival, and for us, for the Big Red, it was always, you know, one we marked on our calendar, on our schedule. And you know, I don't know if it's the same for Syracuse and those guys, but we always took. You know, the opportunity to play in the dome or to host Syracuse, either way, it was just an awesome opportunity to play against, you know, one of the perennial powerhouses. And, you know, it's going to be no different this year. I know the guys are going to be hungry. They're going to be ready to go. There's going to be a great crowd there. And it's an opportunity again to make another statement. Both teams are doing very well this year. Cornell, obviously with their 10-1 record and with some, you know, only one blunder on their record. they're doing great. And, you know, Coach DeLuca has continued the reins from Coach Ambroni, made it his own, and has obviously had some great success. And Coach Richards and Coach Kerwick have filled in very nicely there. And I've heard nothing but great things from the team about those guys. So they're really enjoying it. And from a fan perspective, I'm really enjoying, watching those guys do some work. Obviously haven't had too much opportunity to watch them on TV, but, very often I get together with a lot of the guys that I've graduated with, or a couple guys a few years older, a few years younger, and we pull up the big red cast, and you know, through Apple TV, we put it up on the big screen and get to watch them play. So to have it on ESPNU and then in a few weeks to head out to the Big City Classic and watch them play live again for the second time this year will be awesome. So really pumped for them, what they've done, and hopefully we'll bring home something that me and my classmates weren't able to accomplish in 2009, but we're rooting for them.
Nice. Well, it just kind of maybe described the rivalry a little bit. I think it's unique in its, you know, geographical sense, and you know, Ithaca and Syracuse being so close, but also in that geography kind of dictating the midweek factor of it. You know, playing usually Tuesday, Wednesday night at night. Just what kind of, at least for the regular season, part of the rivalry that you were part of, what was that like? And, you know, playing a midweek game of that magnitude, what is that all about?
It's huge. It's not like your normal weekend game where you have a full week to prepare. You're coming off, you know, for this instance, you got Syracuse who just had a big win, and then Cornell who just came back and beat Harvard. I mean, they were focused on those teams and nothing but those teams until they won, and you don't really have any time to celebrate. You're probably watching film on the other team on the bus ride home. So you've got, you know, a couple of days to heal up your body, most importantly. Get the scout on the opponent and kind of tighten up things that you've made errors, you know, in the prior games. And, for me, going back to those four games, it was always a huge opportunity to play against, you know, who the best. I mean, they've won and you know, countless times, countless championships and against Cornell up in that upstate area, all you hear about is Cornell. You know, there's a lot of other all you hear about is Syracuse. There's a lot of other programs. And we're always kind of the little brother, I guess. And it was kind of our opportunity to step up and win, and make a statement. And we always looked at that game as that might, you know, prior to getting there, I remember watching and I saw Joe Belukis had an epic 7-goal performance. And, you know, that was kind of, you know, when they won, it was a high scoring game. I come in my freshman year, they came to Cornell and, you know, Patty Parrott had 3 goals and they won 11-10 with a couple seconds left. And then my sophomore year, we went there and I had the game winner. I think it was 14-13. So high scoring, you know, up tempo transition game. Obviously junior year and senior year, didn't have as much success against them. But it was always a huge rivalry for us. And, you know, I don't think that's going to change anytime soon. And we both have great coaching staffs, have great traditions. You know, I think we've got the best player in the country this year that helps our side. But you know, it's going to be exciting. And, you know, there's no love lost between those two programs. It's going to be an epic battle. And, you know, looking forward to seeing. You know, I think it was 2 years ago, Cornell did a great job up in the dome. I think it, for me, you know, I've been playing with Rod Pinnell since he was a freshman, and I watched that game with my dad and my roommates in the city in my apartment, and it was one of the, you know, best performances I've ever seen him have. He just picked him apart, and it was very impressive. And you know, guys like Bronzino on defense had a great game, and you know, it takes a full team effort for either side to win this game. But, you know, again, for those guys, for the senior class to have one last shot to go grab a win in the dome, which is not easy for any program to do, I know they're going to be, you know, excited. You know, they got an opportunity early in the year to play in the dome against, Matt Hobart and got the win. And, you know, hopefully we'll get to go ahead and do that again. So.
Well, you, as you mentioned, the sophomore year game in 2007, you score with 4 seconds left to give Cornell the win, in the Carrier Dome. You mentioned the uniqueness of playing in that facility and how tough it is to play there. Take us through that experience and what that was like to score the game winner in such a huge game, rivalry game, and for you guys at the time, especially as a younger player at the time.
Yeah, I mean, coming in as a sophomore, even going out, you know, walking into the dome and going out onto the field for the first time during the shoot around, it's just like this awesome vibe. It's a big college atmosphere vibe. You got the big stands. It's in a dome, you know, and cameras around and, you know, a lot of local fans. So it's a cool feeling. And then you go into that game and I just wanted to run as fast as I can, as hard as I can and play the best game I could. And, you know, 3 minutes into the game, I was exhausted because I was going so hard. I remember, and didn't have one of my better games until, the end of the game. We were tied and, we had an opportunity. We got the ball on the offensive end with 8 seconds to go, and Coach Cambroni called a timeout and he drew up this pretty crazy play. I don't even remember. I was kind of stuck in the moment and didn't really follow. But I was starting with the ball, so that was a little bit of a problem. And I knew it was like carried behind, and you know, Eric Pitter cut for David Mitchell and Max Feedham lefty on the crease and shoot and score. I was like, okay, cool. So we ran out onto the field and I had no idea what just happened. And then, luckily Coach Desco called another timeout and brought it back in, and Coach Ambroni started throwing up another play, and, Max take the ball on the end line. And I just said, hey, Coach, just let me go. Just let me go to the cage. He goes, you sure? I said, yeah. He said, all right. So, we went out there and Stevie Panarelli was on me, and, whistle blew, drove to the cage just like I had 100 times before in practice. Thought I had him beat. He kind of landed a check on my stick. I had to look back to make sure it was still in there, but got a step on him and was able to finish on Colaccini. And it was a pretty unbelievable feeling, having a terrible game, but able to score that goal and to win that game in the dome. Like I said, it was huge for us. And for me personally, that was one of my most memorable moments in college. And then, you know, obviously the icing on the cake was being number one in SportsCenter, so that was another way to cement that memory in my mind. So it was an unbelievable experience, and obviously the last time I won in the dome. But memories I won't forget.
Nice. Now, you mentioned the repetition angle being a big one there, and, you know, kind of not, in your opinion, having the best game, but still having the confidence to be like, give me the ball, I'm going to take this thing, you know, as a sophomore in a hostile environment, you know, a pretty pressurized situation. For the kids that might be listening, for the younger players, like, what is your advice there, like, in pressure situations for kids to focus and have that confidence and play within that confidence, efficiently and accurately?
You know, from day one, when I got on campus, it was all about going as hard as you can every rep and practicing as hard as you can. So when in a game, it was just like doing it like you had 100 times before, 1,000 times before in practice. And for us, most of the time at Cornell, practice was 10 times harder than the games. And the other thing is we focus so much on detail and covering all different aspects of the game, whether it's a man down clear or, you know, keep it in the box at the end of the game, or, you know, you need a goal in the last 30 seconds, what are you going to do? So we covered every situation you could think of. Coach Ambroni, Coach Luca, they were, you know, awesome at preparing us. And when we didn't get it, they drilled us and kept going and going and going. And, it was a long season of that, and you wonder as a player, why do we do this? Why do we do this? And then obviously you start to see as the season goes on, you know, the one or two plays that make a huge difference at the end of certain games. And that's why. And you know, for us, it was just that going into practice every day as if, you know, it was a game. And, you know, the way the coaches did that for us was basically starting off each practice, each week off with a fresh slate. Each player, if you wanted to play, you had to earn your right to keep your position. And once you got the position, you had to keep working hard because you knew the next guy was hungry and trying to take your spot. So, that's kind of how we kept it, kept each other, pushing each other and preparing. And obviously repetitions is kind of puts you in that comfort zone when it comes to that end of the game situation. And, you know, I've been hearing it since I was in high school and in college, great players, in situations want the ball like that. And obviously you could fail, but you know, you got to be in that position to succeed. If you don't put yourself in that position to succeed, then you'll never find out if you could have reached that success. And, you know, in situations like that, for me, it's, you know, there's not much to lose anyway. We were tied. So if I missed, we would have went into overtime. so there wasn't much.
Helps.
But again, there is that pressure that, you know, you would think that the player feels, but I think for most of the players in D1 lacrosse and most of the players that have had some success, you know, you don't even think about it in that game. It's kind of just like you're in a one-on-one. Go to the goal. Do what you've been doing since you're 6 years old. You know, you kind of try to X out everything that's going on outside the lines of the field and the stands and, you know, the sidelines. At that point, it's just, you know, play lacrosse and be a lacrosse player.
Nice. Now in, you know, talking about pressure situations, we would be remiss in, not to talk about the 09 final. You knew I was going to ask about that. We've talked about it before. Given the, nature of the game and tomorrow to Wednesday night, I think we kind of have to talk about it. So just kind of take us through that last play and, you know, what you saw from your angle and, you know, I guess to remind everybody the way, you know, Syracuse scored with 4 seconds left, I guess, to send it in overtime and kind of a fluke play that, you know, is one of the craziest things I've ever seen from, when you add up all the different points of that play, the things that could have gone wrong and not worked for them are pretty amazing. But just kind of what was your viewpoint on that and looking back now, from it, you know, a couple of years later?
Yeah, I mean, it's games like that that really feed to this type of rivalry. And, you know, going into that game, we had some experience to feed off of from the prior game we played them a couple weeks earlier in the regular season. But, you know, we came out strong and we had a 3-goal lead, obviously, going into the last, I think, 3 minutes or so. And I believe I was on the field for the majority of the last 3 minutes of that game. Whether it was wings on face-offs and playing defense or playing offense, you know, I was a big part of that, and I wanted to be. Obviously, whether we succeeded or failed, I was a captain of that team, and I had put so much into that program for 4 years that whether you win or you lose, you know, I think the coaches felt the same way. It was, you know, our seniors needed to really be on that field and decide the fate of it. And for the last minute or so, we went into a zone, and Johnny Glenn and I were down in that zone and both pretty tired. And I remember them swinging the ball and they got a couple shots off, and Jake Myers made some great saves, and they took another shot and we chased it out. So we had the possession with 20 something seconds to go, and I picked up the ball off the end line, and if I were to do it all over again, probably try to run it out. And if you watch any of my games now and I'm in a full field clearing situations, I kind of just always resort to trusting, or trying to take it in my own hands because of that. But, I think, you know, and I probably would have done it, you know, if I were to do it 10 more times, I'd do it the exact same way. I picked up the ball, I threw it upfield, Max Feely was wide open. We ran through the same clear, like we've discussed 100 times in practice. Max Feely threw the ball across the field. Matt Moyer, we got to credit Syracuse. They did not give up. They were down a goal 20 seconds ago, and their attack rode, you know, hard. And you know, for a youth player watching, that's what it was all about. Kenny Nims hustled. Questionable on whether he grabbed our defenseman before he wrap checked, whatever you want to call. You know, I guess you don't want to put it in the ref's hands at that juncture of the game, but whatever it was that he did, he got the ball loose, picked it up and threw it to the middle of the field to Matt Abbott, who somehow caught it and flipped it behind his back. Yeah. And I was on him, and I see the ball just floating in the air, And then there's Forever. Roy Lang to save the day. And he's freshman at the time. He goes up and it's like, it bounces in his stick and it somehow bounces in and out of his stick. And then falls right back into Kenny Nim's stick, who's on the door and dips and dunks it. You know, that 20 seconds is drilled into my memory, but it was almost too real to, I don't even know how to describe it. I just looked at our goalie and he just went like that. I remember that image just drilled in my head and, you know, crazy. So we go into the, you know, middle of the field for the, talk to the refs, the captains met in the middle of the field right before overtime. And, you know, I saw their captains, Kenny Nims, Hardy. All I could do was kind of like laugh. It was just, I didn't know how else to react. And obviously, Sid Smith had a huge check turnover, for them. They got the ball and Cody Jamison, you know, buried one, took advantage of the opportunity he had and then the image of him sprinting across field. And, you know, for us, it was, again, almost a state of shock. The tears didn't hit instantly, but there were plenty, to come. And, you know, it wasn't a great feeling by any means. Obviously something you work towards your entire college career, something you dream about your entire life as a lacrosse athlete. But looking back on it, learned a lot from it. And again, I said it in the post-game interview after that game, and I still stand by it. I wouldn't trade, you know, my experiences, the 4 years I had at Cornell, the guys that I got to spend those years with, and the person I became, for a championship trophy or a national championship ring. Obviously, it would have been a cherry on top, but I'm very proud of what we accomplished, what we achieved. As a group, you know, you gotta move on. And I did very quickly as Dan Hardy was my roommate 3 days later when we were out in Denver playing for the MLO. So it was a quick turnaround and, but obviously, you know, a special season we had, in 2009 for the Big Red. And, but, you know, on to the next thing.
I never heard that you were roommates with Dan Hardy 3 days later in Denver. That's
hysterical. Brian Reese out in Denver must have thought he was funny or something.
On purpose?
He shoved me and Dan Hardy right in a room, and it was, you know, Dan was great about it. He didn't nudge, but I figured I'd, you know, and I still do to this day. We're very good friends. I was at his wedding. But all those Syracuse guys I've become very close with, you know, I'll be the first one to bring it up, break the ice, because it's just, you know, elephant in the room, so I'll take it. They stole that, like in Miracle, when he's asking him about his college, and he's like, "You stole that ringer right off my finger." So I always bring that back to the Cuse boys, but they won, and you know, things happen for a reason, I guess.
Absolutely. Knowing Brian Reese as I do, I'm sure he did that, definitely did that on purpose.
Strategic, for sure.
I'm sure, but, and I guess one last question on that, you know, I think, you know, a lot of people had maybe expected a timeout from you guys, in that last possession. I mean, what do you look back at that and again, say maybe that, what would you have done there?
Again, hindsight is 20/20. I think,
yeah,
in the heat of the battle, I mean, coach, you know, trusted us and, you know, we, 20 seconds left. We've done it a million times before. He's seen us do it, tired or not tired. We've done it before. And you know, for some reason that it wasn't meant to happen. And, you know, I don't know if coach should have called the timeout or not. You know, I'm not going to question any of the calls he made because, you know, everything he did is what got us, to that position. And, you know, it was, I think everyone after the fact is saying, oh, he should have called a timeout, he should have called a timeout, but no one was saying that 20 seconds before. And, you know, it is what it is, and I think just as we retired, I think coach trusted us that we knew what we were doing. The Syracuse, attack and midfield may have been just as tired, if not more, so maybe that clear just would have been, easier. I don't know what would have happened, but, again, it ended as it did, and, I don't question what my coach's calls are ever.
Good. Well, I, as you said, I think let the guys go. You know, let the guys run around. Let you guys go for it and don't question it. You know,
if you stop right there, you give Syracuse and an opportunity to 10-minute ride and set up. Yeah. So I think that's probably the right call, coach. You made just let it go, and it didn't work out for the best, but it happens. If the best team always won, they wouldn't play the game, right?
Exactly. That's what sports is all about. Now, let's kind of go forward to this year. And, we started talking about Rob Pinnell a little bit. As you mentioned, in your opinion and the opinion of many, the best player in the country right now. I know you guys spent a little bit of time, as he was rehabbing in the off season and in the fall. What's kind of your take on where he is right now and what he's got left in front of him?
I mean, as a freshman, he played for Cornell, and he imposed his will then. I mean, he was a big part of why we got to where we were that season in 2009. And he was just as competitive and intense then as he is now. I think the only difference is he's got a little added pressure on him now, but he's got a whole lot of experience. He's got a whole lot more muscle, a whole lot more knowledge and experience than he did as a freshman. But he's that same competitive guy, whether it's you're playing flag football, basketball, some video games, he wants to win and he's most likely going to win. I've spent some time talking to him over the past couple months and, I think some people have almost misconstrued his confidence and his drive to succeed, his cockiness, and he's just, he wants to win and he told me that. He's like, I want to win and I'll do whatever I have to help my teammates win. And I could tell you he's one of the hardest workers I've ever been around. And just as a lacrosse player, I think he's the best guy in the game right now. He's just got this calm, cool, collected feel on the field. He's got style, swagger, physical. but again, he just goes out there and he hustles, for someone who's, as good as he is, has as many accolades as he does, he's still hustling back on every single ride. He's still doing the little things that make a good player great. Those are the things that the intangibles as well and the leadership that he provides are things that make him so good. And you could see he makes everyone around him better. And obviously I'm looking forward to seeing, what he could do. He's been like a little brother to me since he was a freshman. But he's an absolute stud. And this past fall, coming off the injury, he played in the world, the USA tryouts and absolutely dominated. I think he was 4-4. And then he went out to Hawaii and took over out there. When we had our championship game, he scored, 5 goals, whatever it may be, and some in fancy style as well. But he's gone back in a tough position now as a 5th-year senior, and as, again, a leader on the team, trying to find his way to fit into a new group of guys who he wasn't with all fall. He wasn't, with the Ivy League rules, allowed to be on campus or with those guys in the fall, practicing, planning, training, whatever it was, he had to be kind of away from the team. And kind of hit the ground running come February 1st when they had their first practice, and it's shown. So obviously he's got a lot on his plate, as do the rest of the guys, a ton of pressure. But I think they're thriving off it. I think they're having a lot of fun. I think still with their success, they're sliding under the radar a little bit. But we'll see what they can put together.
Yeah, it's interesting you mentioned the cocky versus confident, fine line there. You want guys to be confident, and it seems like when somebody gets a little, when somebody gets confident, if they're confident for too long, then everybody starts calling them cocky, and that tends to happen with a lot of athletes. What is the balance there and what is your take on Rob's, confidence and how he is on the field and toward his game?
Yeah, I think a lot of the past couple of years that he's just, a lot of people have asked him questions about himself and he's answered them honestly. which in sports you want from somebody. But I think now when you ask him questions, he's more kind of deflecting and kind of just giving not you know, bucket answers, but you know, he truly believes in his teammates and his coaches and you know, the guys that have helped him get to where he is, the guys who have pushed him to where he is. So I think that's gone a long way, and he's grown. I mean, everyone grows, and he's learned from his past. I think, you know, as a leader, he's not only focused on you know, himself and his games and winning, it's about the group. And he's been that way throughout. It's just a matter of kind of, you know, I guess giving off that vibe to other people. And it helps on the field. I mean, if people genuinely believe you care about them and are competing for them, they're going to do whatever they can for you. And he's always been like that. Some people just didn't always understand it. And I think he's grown and gotten to that position where, you know, guys just know he wants to win. He's going to do whatever he can to win. And that's for, you know, in this case, he wants to win for Cornell. He believes, you know, that Cornell's given him a great opportunity, and he, you know, he is taking advantage of it. And because of, you know, the other players on the field and the coaches that have helped groom him to get him to where he is, and putting him in a position to succeed, he's kind of just given back to that. And, you know, in his mind, I know this, nothing is a success unless it's a national championship this year. He's hungry. He's, again, one of the more competitive guys I've ever met. And it will not be satisfied until he gets that. And, you know, come Syracuse, my prediction, when they win, you know, he'll get interviewed after the game for a great game. And, you know, he's not going to really show too much emotion and excitement about that one game, because he knows he's got the next one, and he knows he's got, you know, the rest of the Ivy League to take care of, and then earn their spot into the playoffs, and each week try to earn an extra week for the team to be together. You know, it's the last time that 2013 team's going to be together, and if you could earn that extra week with each other, and extend that experience as long as he can, that's his goal. So, you know, I have no doubt in his abilities and his leadership and what he's going to bring. And, I'm excited, and I hope everyone else is excited to watch him, because he's a very special player.
He is fun to watch. It's amazing. Everybody loves an underdog. And then when too many people start liking something, then, you know, the automatic, people are just going to come out and start not liking that thing or person or business or whatever it is. So I've seen it happen a million times in lacrosse. Whenever anybody gets too big, people start knocking, that person. But, you know, that's a sign of, it's a sign of flattery, but, yeah, exactly. So it wouldn't be out there if he wasn't any good. So, let's move forward a little bit and just talk real quick about the Konica-Minolta Big City Classic. We have a little bit of a vested interest in that one, April 27th up at MetLife Stadium, East Rutherford, New Jersey, BigCityClassic.com for tickets. Cornell and Princeton, a huge Ivy League matchup, a huge New York City area matchup with the alumni bases of both programs in the area. You are a New York City resident and Long Island native. What does this event mean for the sport in such a populous area, such a huge area for lacrosse?
I mean, first off, we're talking about two of the teams I hated most in college, Syracuse and Princeton. Orange was hated it in college. Again, then I ended up on the Outlaws. But it was, you know, having – first off, that game in that venue is an unbelievable opportunity, you know, for the guys on the teams, because both Princeton and Cornell, I think at that point should be, you know, if all goes to plan, competing for hosting the Ivy League Championship. That game will have a lot on the line. And regardless of any of what I just said, those teams hate each other. Whether it's for a playoff victory, a regular season game, national championship, these guys are going to go after each other. You know, it's in their minds, two different types of athletes, two different types of people. You know, we're all brainwashed in college yet, you know, supposed to hate those guys. It's tiger meat for that week. And they're going to go, take the opportunity and play in front of, you know, 20, 25,000 people. I mean, to the venue, I mean, there's so much lacrosse in this area. You know, living in New York City, I see it growing every day in Long Island, in New Jersey, in Westchester. I mean, there's going to be so much interest, and it's just so centrally located. And then you, even down in Philly, I mean, people get up to this game, and it's going to be an unbelievable day of lacrosse. Obviously, I believe Syracuse and Notre Dame playing the other game.
Correct.
So you got two, you got two awesome games of lacrosse with great caliber coaching, great caliber on-field play, and you know, some of the best players in the country or in the game right now will be on that field, and a lot is at stake. So you know, those I'm excited. I mean, I already got my ticket. I will be sitting in the big red section, rooting on the boys, and you know, I will be there at probably noon, tailgating with the alumni. Don't often get an opportunity in season to see these guys play in person because of, you know, my NLL commitments and whatnot. But again, I can take full advantage of this and really excited to be there to support those guys. And again, I will have no doubt that those guys will have success on that stage. They've been there before. You know, whether the fans are there or not, those guys have a job to do, and I know Coach Luca and team will have them focused and prepared mentally and physically to walk away with you know, the win that day.
Nice. And you mentioned you will be sitting in that section. You will also likely be walking to that chair, that seat in the stand, so that's good news. Give us an update on the recovery from the injury in the off season, and when you're kind of what your progress level is right now.
Yeah, well, I broke my fifth metatarsal, the Rob Pinnell injury, I call it these days. Got a screw in my foot, and it's been a little longer than expected. But, you know, I'm back on my feet finally, walking for the first time this week. I've been training 3 times a week. I've been doing therapy multiple times a week. I've been in the pool, riding the bike, nonstop. I'm pretty excited to get back at it, and, you know, not having the opportunity to play with the Wings this season has really got me hungry to just hold my stick and compete in the MLL this summer. So I'm going to do whatever I can to get myself in shape and ready to go. And, you know, obviously I'm not going to force it and try to come back too early. I really obviously want to take this seriously and heal up as best as I can instead of re-injuring and then missing the rest of another season. I am in moving in the right direction. Again, have been walking. It still gets sore a little bit here and there, but, have my doctor's appointment, looking forward to that in a week from Wednesday. Same doctor who did the Pinnell surgery as well. Pinnell guy, sticking it.
Keeping it in the family.
And, you know, hopefully, you know, we'll be on the field with the New York Lizards this summer, bringing home an MLL championship with Pinnell by my side. So that's my goal right now. It's day by day, continuing to push myself, you know, and have kind of some of my goals that keep me driving each day and hungry. And again, I'm excited to get back out on the field and play with my teammates.
Yeah, and a few new teammates this year for the Lizards. Rob being one of the draft picks, and also Steve Berger coming back to the island. Mark Matthews coming in. Kind of a new look team that was pretty new last year with some of the rookies in Tommy Palisak and Matt Gibson. You guys got a nice young offensive nucleus. What are kind of your thoughts on that offense and how it's shaping up this year?
I forgot David Earl there, who's not too shabby either.
Good call.
But since last year, you know, we've had a new ownership group that's taken over and has done so much for our team on and off the field. Obviously, with the new name, New York Lizards instead of Long Island, it kind of changes the vibe, representing a little bit more, you know, and you know, with that name comes, I guess, a little bit added responsibility. And you know, for us, it's an awesome opportunity to now, you know, compete for New York, you know, best city in the world. And, you know, it's where I live now. It's you know, kind of lacrosse is booming here. It's never been played in a city. Like, we will have a couple games this season, but again, that new ownership group, from what they've done off the field, they've done an even better job influencing the on the field decisions. And, you know, we've had some great success this offseason with bringing in some guys on both ends of the field. And you mentioned all the offensive weapons we have that are going to make us even better. I mean, the only thing we have to worry about is chemistry, and that hopefully with having a lot of local guys will come in practice and come sooner rather than later. We had a young group last year that put in the time and practice, cared, communicated, and built chemistry real quick and had some success, except for the meltdown 9-goal lead in the semifinal last year against Denver. So again, we have a chip on our shoulder. We lost last year, and you know, I could tell by the training camp guys are ready to go this year. And coach, you know, he's one of the more passionate, genuine guys that I've ever met, and I love playing for him. Coach Spallina. But you know, they've toughened up our defense a little bit. We got guys like Reed and Waldeck. So in addition to a very successful defense last year, that are backed up by the best goalie in the league, Drew Adams, and we got the best faceoff guy in the league coming back in Greg Grenly and the Beast. So it's just a matter of executing. I mean, they've done everything we could have asked and put the players in the position, and got us all together. It's just a matter of us executing come game day and putting W's up and bringing home that cup at the end of the year. And that's our team goal. You know, I think everyone in the MLL will say the same thing, but again, it's not a success until we bring that to New York. And we've got a lot of expectations for ourselves. And I think a lot of other people have expectations for us. Unlike last year, I think, other teams were really up there and favored over us, and we kind of slid under the radar. And this year, I think we got a bullseye on our back, having beat some teams multiple times last year and had some success, but obviously didn't win. So we're unhappy with that, but we know where we stand. We know what our goals are, and we're really looking forward to the summer.
Nice. Now, I guess second to last question. You're also the face of Nike Lacrosse, obviously. Give us kind of an update on what's going on with Nike and the next steps, anything coming out that we should be keeping our eyes on.
Yeah, I mean, you see it everywhere. I mean, Nike's got the most innovative stuff out there, not only in lacrosse, but in everything. I mean, you got the Fuel Band here, you got the Flyknit shoes, there we go, wearing them every day. I mean, it's all great stuff, and when, can't really leak any secrets to anyone, they're very protective over launches and stuff like that, but had a great mobile tour last summer, and they've got some big things coming up this summer. You see their product on field. You saw the Q's jerseys last week, the anthracite grays with the neon orange. Not only is it cool looking, it's innovative. I mean, the hyper cool technology, you might not have seen the venting in the jerseys and the shorts, but it's made to make the athlete better. And you get that vibe from everything they do, whether it's in building the product or in their marketing or any events they put on, that they're really trying to help better the athlete. And I think that's why they've been successful. It's the core of the business, and it's awesome to be a part of and have input in some of the things they do. So they definitely have some things to look forward to. Keep your eyes out.
How many, what's your Nike fuel points for the day so far?
4,000. 300.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow.
I worked out. I had PT today too, but once I'm done with that, there's not much other activity.
Yeah. So. All right. I'm impressed.
You got something? What do you got?
3,200. You're killing me. Yeah. I haven't gotten a workout in yet. I'm busy working.
Yeah. Well, that's not a great day for me either, but
I'll see where I'm at by the end of the day. Well, great. Well, this has been great. I want one last question. Give me some score predictions for Syracuse Cornell Wednesday night, and then Syracuse Princeton April 27th at MetLife Stadium. What do you got?
14-11 for the Cuse game, and the Princeton game, I'm going to go with 11-7.
Wow.
Obviously both Cornell.
Both Cornell wins. You're really going out on a limb in that one. I'm surprised.
Come on. They're favorite in both. Come on. In my mind, always. I got my big red on all the time.
I like it. I'm not, it's what I expected. So I appreciate it, man. Well, again, be sure to stay tuned, into ESPNU Wednesday night, 6 p.m. Cornell, Syracuse, live from the Carrier Dome. And then April 27th, MetLife Stadium at East Rutherford, New Jersey, for the Big City Classic, 4:30 for the Cornell Princeton tip off, and then 6:30 for Syracuse Notre Dame. Actually one last question that I always forget to ask. Give me one tip for, a young kid out there, one thing that he or she can do on their own to get better coming up in the ranks.
I think, you know, being part of my business, I run my own camps business, and the one thing I see all over the country is kids just want to scrimmage, and they don't really spend as much time as we used to on practicing and the fundamentals. If you could master the fundamentals, catching, throwing, and picking up ground balls, and then a little bit into shooting, you know, everything else in the game comes easier. You know, spend the time on the wall. I think if you ask most people, their advice would be play wall ball, but play wall ball with the intention to improve and get better. Just like make it a game. Challenge yourself each time to you know, incrementally get better, and then, you know, everything else, you just watch the games, go to the games and see it live, and try to, you know, look up to some guys and emulate those guys, and that's what I used to do. I used to watch the games, the one or two games that were on in a season, and I'd go into my backyard and I'd you know, practice what, you know, I looked up to, you know, Doniger brothers, Jason and Adam. They went Hopkins and Princeton, and you know, I watched those guys. I'd go to, you know, Princeton, New Jersey, and watch them play, and then I'd, you know, try to mentally see what they did, and then I go in my backyard and I practice, and you know, so mastering the fundamentals, and then kind of just watching the game to really understand it from fundamental point of view, but also from a lacrosse IQ point of view, and try to not just watch the guy with the ball, but watch everything else that's going on. It's going to help you become a better lacrosse player.
Nice, great advice. I love hearing from guys like you who talk about the guys that they looked up to a generation ago. You know, it's fascinating. But everybody has those guys, and hopefully, you know, there's players. I mean, you know as well as I do, there's tons of kids out there looking up to you, watching you, and hope to be you know, rocking the number 42 one day. So thank you for the great advice for the kids out there, and good luck to the Big Red. We'll see you at the Meadowlands April 27th.
Looking forward to it. Thanks for having me.
Hopefully we'll get something going before that, and we'll hype it up in the city and promote the event. But thanks again for the time, man.
Absolutely. Take care. Appreciate it.
Inside the Cross Podcast.